A few minutes later, she got up and went to the phone. She knew the number of the police station, and when the man at the other end answered, she cried to him, "Quick, come quick, Patrick's dead." "Who's speaking?" "Mrs. Maloney, Mrs. Patrick Maloney."
"You mean Patrick Maloney's dead?"
"I think so," she sobbed. "He's lying on the floor, and I think he's dead."
"Be right over," the man said.
The car came very quickly. When she opened the front door, two policemen walked in. She knew them both. She knew nearly all the men at that precinct, and she fell right into Jack Noonan's arms, weeping hysterically. He put her gently into a chair, then went over to join the other one, who was called O'Malley, kneeling by the body. "Is he dead?" she cried.
"I'm afraid he is. What happened?"
Briefly, she told her story about going out to the grocer and coming back to find him on the floor. While she was talking, crying and talking, Noonan discovered a small patch of congealed blood on the dead man's head. He showed it to O'Malley, who got up at once and hurried to the phone. Soon, other men began to come into the house, first a doctor, then two detectives, one of whom she knew by name. Later, a police photographer arrived and took pictures, and a man who knew about fingerprints. There was a great deal of whispering and muttering beside the corpse, and the detectives kept asking her a lot of questions, but they always treated her kindly. She told her story again, this time right from the beginning, when Patrick had come in, and she was sewing, and he was tired, so tired he hadn't wanted to go out for supper. She told how she'd put the meat in the oven. "It's there now cooking." And how she'd slipped out to the grocer for vegetables and come back to find him lying on the floor.
"Which grocer?" one of the detectives asked.
She told him, and he turned and whispered something to the other detective, who immediately went outside into the street. In 15 minutes, he was back with a page of notes, and there was more whispering, and through her sobbing, she heard a few of the whispered phrases. "Acted quite normal. Very cheerful. Wanted to give him a good supper. Peas. Cheesecake. Impossible that she..." After a while, the photographer and the doctor departed, and two other men came in and took the corpse away on a stretcher. Then the fingerprint man went away. The two detectives remained, and so did the two policemen. They were exceptionally nice to her. And Jack Noonan asked if she wouldn't rather go somewhere else, to her sister's house, perhaps, or to his own wife, who would take care of her and put her up for the night. "No," she said. She didn't feel she could move even a yard at the moment. Would they mind awfully if she stayed just where she was until she felt better? She didn't feel too good at the moment. She really didn't. "Then hadn't she better lie down on the bed?" Jack Noonan asked. "No," she said. "She'd like to stay right where she was, in this chair. A little later, perhaps, when she felt better, she would move." So they left her there, while they went about their business, searching the house. Occasionally, one of the detectives asked her another question. Sometimes Jack Noonan spoke to her gently as he passed by. Her husband, he told her, had been killed by a blow on the back of the head, administered with a heavy, blunt instrument, almost certainly a large piece of metal. They were looking for the weapon. The murderer may have taken it with him, but on the other hand, he may have thrown it away or hidden it somewhere on the premises. "It's the old story," he said. "Get the weapon and you've got the man."
Later, one of the detectives came up and sat beside her. "Did she know," he asked, "of anything in the house that could have been used as the weapon? Would she mind having a look around to see if anything was missing? A very big spanner, for example, or a heavy metal vase?" "They didn't have any heavy metal vases," she said.
"Or a big spanner?"
She didn't think they had a big spanner, but there might be some things like that in the garage. The search went on. She knew that there were other policemen in the garden all around the house. She could hear their footsteps on the gravel outside, and sometimes she saw the flash of a torch
through a chink in the curtains. It began to get late. Nearly 9, she noticed by the clock on the mantel. The 4 men searching the room seemed to be growing weary, a trifle exasperated. "Jack," she said the next time Sergeant Noonan went by, "would you mind giving me a drink?"
"Sure, I'll give you a drink. You mean this whiskey?"
"Yes, please, but just a small one. It might make me feel better." He handed her the glass. "Why don't you have one yourself?" she said. "You must be awfully tired. Please do. You've been very good to me."
"Well," he answered, "it's not strictly allowed, but I might take just a drop to keep me going."
One by one, the others came in and were persuaded to take a little nip of whiskey. They stood around rather awkwardly, with the drinks in their hands, uncomfortable in her presence, trying to say consoling things to her. Sergeant Noonan wandered into the kitchen, came out quickly and said, "Look, Mrs. Maloney, you know that oven of yours is still on and the meat still inside?"
"Oh, dear me," she cried. "So it is."
"I better turn it off for you, hadn't I? Will you do that, Jack? Thank you so much."
When the sergeant returned the second time, she looked at him with her large, dark, tearful eyes. "Jack Noonan," she said.
"Yes?"
"Would you do me a small favor, you and these others?"
"We can try, Mrs. Maloney."
"Well," she said, "here you all are, and good friends of dear Patrick's too, and helping to catch the man who killed him. You must be terribly hungry by now, because it's long past your supper time, and I know Patrick would never forgive me, God bless his soul, if I allowed you to remain in his house without offering you decent hospitality. Why don't you eat up that lamb that's in the oven? It'll be cooked just right by now."
"Wouldn't dream of it," Sergeant Noonan said.
"Please," she begged, "please eat it. Personally, I couldn't touch a thing, certainly not what's been in the house when he was here. But it's all right for you. It'd be a favor to me if you'd eat it up. Then you can go on with your work again afterwards." There was a good deal of hesitating among the 4 policemen, but they were clearly hungry, and in the end they were persuaded to go into the kitchen and help themselves. The woman stayed where she was, listening to them through the open door, and she could hear them speaking among themselves, their voices thick and sloppy because their mouths were full of meat.
"Have some more, Charlie. No, better not finish it. She wants us to finish it. She said so, be doing her a favor. Okay, then, give me some more." "That's the hell of a big club the guy must have used to hit poor Patrick," one of them was saying. "The doc says his skull was smashed all to pieces, just like from a sledgehammer." "That's why it ought to be easy to find. Exactly what I say. Whoever done it, they're not going to be carrying a thing like that around with them longer than they need."
One of them belched.
"Personally, I think it's right here on the premises. Probably right under our very noses. What do you think, Jack?"
And in the other room, Mary Maloney began to giggle.